This is the place where Black is the main character, where we dive into something new like the latest season of Them, The Scare, and the award-winning American Fiction. Or add to the experience by buying or renting the biopic of a legend, Bob Marley, One Love. And add on channels like Paramount Plus and Stars to bask in nostalgia with Beverly Hills Cop and BMF. Explore Prime Video's culture-rated collection and enjoy old-school greats and new-school hits. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/Amazon Prime for details.
Greetings from Long Time No See, the podcast. Every week, we'll be inviting two blindfolded comedians to answer a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Now, let's remove those blindfolds and start the show.
Hi!
What would your opening line with your celebrity crush be?
Loved you in Harry Potter.
Worst date you've been on?
A man bit my neck mole off once.
You did what?
A man bit my neck mole off.
Oh my God, Jack almost fell off his chair.
Be sure to follow and subscribe to the podcast.
Consequence Podcast Network. Hello, and welcome to the Spark Parade, where I geek out with artists and entertainers about their cultural spark of inspiration. I'm Adam Unz, at Spark Parade on all social media. Thanks ever so much for joining me. My guest this week is Everything Everything frontman Jonathan Higgs, who spoke to me about his spark, Chris Batchelder's novel Bear v. Shark. Side note, we discussed this during the interview, but I have no idea how to pronounce the author's name, so sorry if we're butchering your last name, Chris. Anyway, it is very nice when guests pick sparks that are a bit off the beaten track. I'd never heard of this book before, and I like discovering new stuff, so thanks to Jonathan for that. And he's got a super close connection with this book, because it's informed some of the backstory for Everything Everything's new album, and you'll hear more about that in our chat in mere minutes. Quick Jonathan facts. Jonathan Higgs is an English singer, songwriter, filmmaker, director, and multi-instrumentalist. He is best known as the frontman of the art rock band Everything Everything, with whom he has released 6 studio albums and 5 EPs. He is noted for having an unusually wide vocal range, particularly his use of falsetto. Everything Everything's new 7th studio album, Mountainhead, an eagerly anticipated collection of songs that meld dystopian Black Mirror-style concepts with abstract art pop sonics, will be released this coming Friday, March 1st. Quick Bear v. Shark facts. Bear v. Shark is a novel by Chris Batchelder, published in 2001. Reading like Don DeLillo on acid, Batchelder's debut is a futuristic one-joke novel about a whimsical confrontation between two unlikely predators. The premise is simple. Bear v. Shark is a monster pay-per-view event staged in Las Vegas in which a bear and a shark fight it out in a tank of water deep enough for the shark to maneuver efficiently, but shallow enough to give the bear an even chance to hold its own. Most of the novel consists of Batchelder examining the event via an acidic, over-the-top running commentary and skewering American culture and the consumer-driven media overload that dominates modern life. And there you have it. Let's jump ahead to the good stuff. Here comes my chat with Jonathan Higgs about Bear v. Shark.
Do you remember hearing about Bear v. Shark for the first time?
Yeah, it was my cousin Ben back in the days of Facebook. Well, I mean, it's still around. He put it in his list of, like, you know, 5 books or whatever. You know, you used to show your personality on there with your choices, and one of them was Bear v. Shark. And I think I asked him what it was, or he recommended it, or I just read the synopsis based on that. But that could have been as far back as 2004 or something. I think it was a long, long time ago. But yeah, it was as simple as that, really. It was a book that seemed to be finding its way to me one way or another.
Yeah. And I mean, do you remember, like, what appealed to you about it? Kind of what got you into wanting to read it?
Yeah. I mean, it's a very absurd premise. Everybody in society is obsessed with this question about what would win between a bear and a shark. And it just appealed to my sense of humor immediately. And the little scraps of it I could find online, it just seemed to be such a strange approach to anything. I just couldn't believe that there would be something like this to fill a book. It just seemed completely stupid. but in a kind of like in an accessible way. I just it was just pure curiosity, but it was more the it was the audacity of the whole thing. It is just as silly as that premise, really. It isn't a very normal narrative at all, and that even the way it's told is completely apt for what it's trying to do. You'll get two or three pages of what's happening in the story, but then you'll just sort of, the next three will be an advert for something like an extreme weather channel or something like this, where they're talking about how extreme the weather is on their channel and why you should check it out. And everything is just so kind of oversaturated and absurdist throughout. And you're trying to relate to this family that don't seem to really operate in a normal way at all. They don't seem to know each other. They don't seem to care about anything other than this question: who would win in a bear versus a shark? And everything is like that. And yeah, that's fine for a bit. And you're thinking like, well, this can't be, you know, where's this going? But you start to realize that they have to go on this journey, and you start to realize the sort of the world that the America that they're in is sort of it's not quite war torn, but there's definitely lots of bad shit going on. And there's some kind of rebellion to this society. But because you're spending all your time with this family who are entrenched in this really shallow sort of consumerist mindset, they ignore it. And so you don't really get to see it. And every now and again, it'll be like, oh, they drove past a burning car or something with bodies. And they just sort of start talking about something else.
Mm-hmm.
And this happens just here and there and here and there. I think they might be going to see the event, Bevy Sharp. I can't quite remember. So yeah, that's sort of the basis of it. But where it ends up is kind of so insane. But I really, really was drawn to this feeling of horror at the same, like juxtaposed with really commercial satire, really. It just appealed to me so much. I feel like that mindset is really where I've written a huge number of songs from, is not quite in that world, but that approach, it really affected me in terms of how to get across dark things without turning people off, I think, and kind of making myself laugh without it having to be really stupid. It can actually be both. And that's sort of how I like to write lyrics.
Right. Then, you know, having that kind of, I read an interview with him where he was talking about, you know, it's a book that is in a lot of ways quite prophetic.
Very much.
The obsession with kind of reality TV and the obsession with especially like competition. I mean, I'm thinking specifically of like the Squid Game show that, you know, everybody's going absolutely insane for. And I read an interview with the author, and he was saying if he knew what was going to happen, he doesn't think he would have written the book in the same way, because being a prophet, when you're predicting things that happen like 3 months after the book is written, it's not like, this faraway future. It was like basically immediately reality TV took off and it was all kind of happening at the same time.
And we're still seeing, I mean, even, you know, the presidential election now is akin to absurdities that you wouldn't, it wasn't like that even 20 years ago. And, you know, the next one, as we know, sitting here right now, is going to be ridiculous, but nearly all of it won't be about politics. It will be about, can this old guy beat this old guy, and who can do the most press-ups and stuff like this. It's sort of like a gamification of everything.
Yeah.
Trying to make everything into a game, make everything fun and nothing serious. And he got that so right. But that thing you were mentioning there of prophesizing to a degree, I found happen with my band a lot as well. And I think it's because of this book. I think it's because that's how I started. It's just to turn up what I'm already seeing to 11. And lo and behold, that's the thing that happens next. And it's happened. We've predicted so many things, not specifically, but like feelings and big events like Brexit and like Trump getting in were preceded immediately by a record that we made that was basically talking about this rising anger, which arguably was the driving force between both those events in our two societies right at the right time. It was kind of uncanny. And then it's happened a few times since. And I think it's because it's this approach that he's got. I don't actually know how to say his surname. Is it Bachelder or Bachelder?
That's why I was specifically avoiding. I was like, the author. Yeah.
Chris.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's probably, I just don't read that much satire. So it's probably not even that unusual, but it does feel prescient. Bevy Shark feels very, very prescient all the time to me.
Mm.
And I haven't experienced something that's felt more prescient since I read it. That's why I've gone back to it today, even though I read it 20 years ago.
Yeah. And that thing about satire, I mean, I guess by its definition, it's about skewering what is your reality. So it can never be too far away from what is actually happening. But in this specific instance, it's like, and I think it's the same thing with something like Brexit. Like I'm British and American, and my husband's English. And I remember just before the Brexit referendum, I was like, I'm really nervous about this. And he's like, oh, shut the fuck up. Like, this is never going to happen. Like, we know what the country is. Like, people aren't going to vote for that. And it's something that's like absurd in a way that is still just, I mean, this is a little, pushes it a little further, but it's just within the realm of possibilities, just about something that you can imagine happening. And I think that's what he does so brilliantly, is that it's like, this, a lot of stuff is heightened and exaggerated, but the idea of like Las Vegas becoming its own, you know, country and, you know, having like independent nations within the US because it's such a fractured country, none of that seems that far-fetched to me.
No, not at all.
And also the obsession with, you know, gamification, as you were saying, having some kind of new national pastime that people become so obsessed with, and it's something that's, you know, very online, this, you know, virtual, like computer generated thing that people are still going completely mental for. All of that feels like it's something that feels a little bit silly, but could absolutely take place.
Yeah, it's only silly in when you see it written down, and yet there's probably sillier things going on that we just accept because they're on the news channel rather than the comedy channel.
Right. Right. And like what you're saying about, I mean, American politics, but I think politics across the world.
I was just gone completely insane.
Yeah.
In the same period.
Yeah.
Like it's unrecognizable, and it's gone beyond embarrassment. It's turned into something. Well, it's very similar to what's happening in America, but we've had the bad guys in charge all this time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like a head spinning amount of change, you know, rotating cast of characters. Nobody really seems to be able to hold on to power for that long because they're all so inept and such fucking idiots.
And they'll just drag it all down further every time a new one comes along. And
Yeah. And also, I mean, the new Argentinian president,
God. And I think this Dutch one as well, or something that's
pretty
interesting guy.
Right.
Yeah.
And that impulse that people have, that it feels like part dissatisfaction with the way their perception of how their country is, the economy, whatever issues they're worried about of the day. But also, they're just fucking bored and they're like, this guy's funny.
Yeah, why not?
And that you don't have to dig too deeply. It's just like politics. It's all kind of entertainment. Everything is entertainment and it doesn't, you know.
They're all the same, but this guy's funny.
Right. And not really worrying about the consequences. Oh, it's exhausting. I mean, I guess
it is.
Shifting gears slightly, the other thing that I think is a big component of kind of the appeal of this novel is the writing style and the kind of constant shifts in tone. And it's all, you know, it feels like I've seen comparisons to like flipping through channels on the TV where it's like little snippets of different things that are happening all over the place. And I think he does that really effectively too.
That's very much one of the big things I took from this. It's funny because I didn't mean to, but that is basically how I write a lot of lyrics, is that I will switch tone straight in the middle of something with a similar sort of palette. So it'll go from me trying to sell you something and using all that kind of language to something very, very personal and distressing, and then straight back. And people often ask me, why the hell have I done that? And I usually say it's because I think that's what people's lives feel like, especially in the 21st century. There isn't, you don't have the long winter to think about whatever that we used to have. You just have like, now that it's going to happen, and now this is going to happen, and you have to put on all these different faces and consume all these different types of experience and be lots of different things a lot of the time. And that's how I want the lyrics to feel, like it's sort of churning and you're lost in there somewhere and all these things are sort of assailing you. Is my favorite type of sort of chaos in art. I don't really like the like straightforward, we're going to have a sad song now and these are all the sad things I'm going to sing about. I much prefer to have, you know, I'm going to write a song about someone dying. Okay, then I'll open it with something that's seemingly very inappropriate to be in a song like this at all, but that's because it doesn't have to be sort of random. It's more that it's a true reflection of what it feels like, and that's what songs are, is feelings,
right?
At the end of the day.
Yeah And also, you know, I know this book is talking a lot about like internet culture and just being bombarded with information and images and sounds constantly, and definitely that has exacerbated the inability for people to kind of focus too completely on one thing, that everyone's focus is kind of split at all times. But I think that's also just human nature. It's like what you're saying when you talk about somebody dying. Somebody dies in your life and it's not like it is complete sorrow 24 hours a day. There is no break. You don't have any other thoughts about anything except this person dying. It's like you are thinking about other things. There are moments of the day where things are still funny. There are moments of the day where, you know, you're confused by something, whatever.
Yeah, it seems dishonest to pretend otherwise. I always find it's fine to concentrate on, to focus. Of course it is. But if you want a real reflection, I prefer it like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, the other part of it that in this book is that it is this hyper-realized version of our current reality, where people are so online, people are so, you know, locked into every single thing that's happening around them, that nobody has any time to just be at rest. Their minds can't just, you know, be.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's no downtime to be found in the book at all. The only real, well, you've read it. Have you read mm-hmm. it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the end, the son gets a head injury mm-hmm. and you can't tell, his dad can't tell if he's affected or not, which is so, it's such an insane thing to do. Like what is he saying there? That's so insane, and I love it for that. That's I wish I had those kind of balls, really. How much further can you go? He's sort of he's lost his brain mm-hmm. and he's just like, oh, I don't know, is he all right, is he seems all right, kind of thing.
yeah
I just wanted to mention that I have put head injuries into a lot of my songs, and I'm always searching for a new way to describe stupidity, because I've used all the words and I don't want to use like bad ones, but that does come up an awful lot in what I do, and I feel like it's coming from the same place, this trying to show my utter distaste for like operating on that level or something. I don't know what it is, but I feel like I want to just say you're stupid quite a lot when I'm writing songs. And I feel like that comes from that world.
right.
I don't know how else to describe it, but yeah, that it's, you can't, you can have the book and you can have your thoughts about it, but that ending is just such a brilliant sort of fuck you, I think, to all of it. It's kind of like, whatever, he's literally like disabled now and nothing's changed. Because that's clearly where they've been throughout anyway. Like the dad has some doubts when he meets the like TV people in the valley or wherever, and then it's just like, nah, just let's go see Bevy Shark.
Yeah, yeah.
Time for a quick break, because somebody's got to keep the lights on around here. But we'll be right back.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Welcome to Prime Video's Culture-Rated Collection. This is the place where Black is the main character, where we don't jump through hoops just to hear our voice and can fall in love with illuminating documentaries like Giannis, The Marvelous Journey.
I'm just a hard worker that's trying to survive.
Enjoy the animated series, The Second Best Hospital in the Galaxy.
All doctors report immediately!
Where we dive into something new like the latest season of Them, The Scare, and the award-winning American Fiction.
Welcome home, baby!
Or add to the experience by buying or renting the biopic of a legend, Bob Marley, One Love.
I want my music to unify people.
And add on channels like Paramount Plus and Stars to bask in nostalgia with Beverly Hills Cop.
This is the cleanest police car I've ever been in my life.
And BMF.
You're about to take over the whole nation.
Explore Prime Video's culture-rated collection and enjoy old school greats and new school hits. Prime Video, find your happy place. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.
And it's also like, you know, all of this kind of commentary on how people relate to each other with too much technology being thrown at them all the time. And a lot of reviews of the book that I've read have said it's like the family, you know, the core, that family who are at the center of the book, none of them really know each other. None of them really have any interest in each other.
Not at all.
And that's interesting as well. Just like not being able to have... not being able to engage with the reality around you, that it's all about this, like, the glossy distractions of screens.
Yeah,
and
but that, if nothing else, that's probably the most prophetic part of it, is this sort of isolationist thing that we're all hurtling towards, which obviously was speeded up by the pandemic, but we were already well on course. And the idea of a family, but when no one comes out of their rooms, and when they do, it's a bit of a chore to interact, is not far-fetched at all. Like, I know people are living like that already, and that's only going to increase. It just will.
Yeah.
People staying indoors is massively a thing now, isn't it? And why wouldn't it be? You've got everything you need right here. We're both doing it right now.
Right. Right. But also this idea that, like, the very worst thing in the world now is being bored, and that there is no tolerance for it. You know, people, if you leave your phone in the other room while you're going to make a cup of tea, it's like, fuck, what do I do while I'm waiting this, like, 30 seconds? I don't have anything to do.
Yeah. The idea of going for a toilet trip without a phone
right.
is like unthinkable.
Right.
And it's like, what did I used to do? I guess I used to read the back of the deodorant can.
Right.
It's like,
yeah.
I suppose there were always the toilet books, weren't there? But whatever.
Right. Right. But even that, it's like I'm just as guilty of it as anybody, but there is something hilarious to me about, like, you can't just have a shit. You need some entertainment while you're doing it. It's like, why would you do it if you can't be, you know, flipping through?
And if you do for whatever reason not have your phone, then you feel as though you've missed out on however long of entertainment,
mm-hmm.
or you could have read something, or you could have checked something in that time. There's only a couple of situations where I don't have my hands and therefore a phone. One of them is washing up. And I always find my thoughts really start to wander when I'm washing up. It's because I can't be distracted. And the other one, another big one for me, is swimming, which I do less than I did, but you can't distract yourself. And so after the first 20 minutes, your brain is somewhere completely new. And I get out of the pool every time and kind of think, oh, this is great. I've had so many good ideas. Why don't I do this more often? You know, not be distracted. And then I'll just be straight back.
Yeah. I find that, like, in the sauna at the gym after I work out. I'll sit in there and then I, you know, that's like, I'm completely free from any technology. But people come in there with their phones and are like looking at videos on their phones, whatever. And I'm like, first of all,
what? That'll fuck your phone.
How much did you pay for that phone? Exactly. Like, it's going to melt. And also, just again, this idea that even in spaces that are designed for calm and quiet, and people are just supposed to, like, you know, be able to contemplate their own existence or whatever for a few minutes, and people cannot stand it.
No, no. Well, it's funny to use that language, because I think it is a type of fear. I think it is a type of revulsion, but on a level that's not, you know, you wouldn't really accept that about yourself. But I think it's a fear that your mind will go to something that you don't want it to, not necessarily a trauma or something, but just if you leave a mind long enough, then it will eventually get to death, and it will eventually get to inevitability, I think. But maybe that's just me. But I think that distraction is like an attractive prospect for everybody. I think everyone enjoys not having to face reality, because reality is insane. And if you were ever to realize just like what real reality was, like the insanity of reality, I don't think any of us have ever realized it fully, but the closer you get to it, the more terrifying it gets, I think. But it's hard to not many people have got to leave the earth. They haven't had the chance, but those people get a weird perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Astronauts,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah.
There's actually in the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, there's a machine called something like Ultimate Perspective Machine or something, and it's a punishment that they do to the worst criminals, is put them in this machine that shows them, allows their brain to be able to understand how big the universe is and how small they are. And that's all it does, but it just, like, it drives you insane if you go into it. So it's like, it's the worst punishment, because it gives you like full perspective. It's a good idea,
that. I also, like, it feels like the intersection with kind of the gamification of everything is there too, that, or like everything, like life being a competition. And if you're away from your phone and all of your friends find out who Ariana Grande is dating before you do,
mm-hmm.
you're being left behind, or you're losing that race, that it's like, you have to consume information. You have to be on top of everything.
Yeah. Information is the currency.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah, gathering enough of it to be richer than the next person, I suppose.
Right. And also that idea of competition and entertainment and all of that stuff being like shifting from live events, things that people can only see in person because, you know, things weren't televised, to things being televised, to this idea where it's like virtual fights that people are desperate to see, that are super exclusive. Only a handful of people can actually be there in person, but they're still seeing something virtual. And it's like the, you know, ABBA holograms or whatever, where people are going to concerts and there's no actual people there.
Well, it's like the Facebook versus X fight that we supposedly we were about to get.
Right.
It was a perfect.
Yeah.
It was Bear v. Shark again.
Yeah.
The fact that it didn't happen sort of didn't matter. It was.
No.
It still had the same amount of like chat around it. Yeah. Very similar. It feels like you can superimpose almost anything onto this framework of an absurd, pointless competition of some description that everyone is interested in. I think that's why it's such a successful idea. Our latest record that's coming out is probably closer to Bear v. Shark than any of ours, even though our first single had very similar stuff going on, where there was I'd set up like this sort of sitcom that was meant to be a bit like Friends, and it was very false and very American and clean and everything. And then it had like rockets hit the set kind of during it. And it was all, that song was all kind of sung from as if there's an argument going on here, but there's also a bomb going off here. So it was all very, very Bear v. Sharky in terms of its tone. Like, people were getting literally exploded, and then someone else was like pissed off because of something very minor, but it was all jumbled together, just to give you an idea of how influential it's been on me. But yeah, our newest record has a similar, not similar, but it definitely the simplicity of this sort of monomyth thing, a society that's consumed similarly just by building a mountain. That's all they want to do. Everybody talks about building this mountain. How big can we make it? And they're doing it, unlike in Bear v. Shark. They're actually doing it. But the only problem is, in order to make it bigger, you have to keep digging. So everyone has to live in this massive hole. And that's all there is to it. That's the whole album idea and everything that you can imagine that would come from that. So it's kind of like a religion, and you have these kind of priests that keep encouraging you to do it and saying, you've got to make it bigger. No one really understands why. They just know they have to keep going, and everything's getting worse and worse. So you're living deeper and deeper in this hole. And there's all these rumors about what might be at the top. And supposedly it's just a big mirror, or it's just like a big screen that just shows you like repeating and repeating. And that's like the ultimate goal is to get there and see yourself. So yeah, I think it's very, very sharky. I love the idea of everybody being consumed by something that's ultimately a bit pointless or a bit ridiculous, or actively makes your life worse in the pursuit of it, which is how I see a good portion of modern life.
Mm.
Obviously, I wouldn't say all of it, but yeah. But that is the if I was to die tomorrow and someone said, what did he write songs about? It would probably be concluded that it was some kind of message about how we don't live in a way that is good for us anymore, or something like that.
Mm.
In a very, very simplistic terms. But that's the main idea that I always come back to, and I am personally consumed by. This mountain head. So the record's called Mountain Head.
Mm.
And that's like a slang term that you have for somebody who's really a big believer in the mountain. So like calling them a Bible basher or something. So a mountain head is like it's not a swear word, but it's maybe not the best thing to be called. Yeah. So it feels like an obvious line can be drawn from Bear the V-Shark to this. Definitely can. Absurdist satirical idea that's pretty simple, but has lots of meaning. Basically, if you want it to, can be applied to an awful lot, while still being sort of quite amusing and easy enough to grab onto for everyone. We just got to build a mountain, and we have to live in a hole.
Mm-hmm.
The end.
Right.
So yeah, I think I owe him another pint.
Yeah. And again, these ideas that it's like feels like just outside of what is possible right now. Like you can imagine people being like, what? Like digging down deeper so we can build this big mountain? Actually, yeah, I could do that.
Yeah. I think we're already doing it. I think it's we do live in the dark. You know? We were just talking about this isolation of the modern person.
Mm.
We're cutting off things. We're moving underground in the pursuit of, it's hard to say, isn't it? What are we after? What are we? Why are we trying to get more money as a group? What does any of it mean anymore? It's all built on debt and lies and numbers on a screen. It's very strange world. If you were to pluck somebody out of 1300s France and try to explain to them what we do now, they wouldn't know. They just wouldn't ever be able to understand it for as long as they lived. And I don't think that we who've grown up with it really understand it, other than that's just what we're doing because it's the obvious thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
You must grow and expand. Your economies must keep growing endlessly. And you must live in an increasingly questionable environment in order to pursue this goal. You must live in smaller and smaller houses packed together and have things delivered to you. And it's also this like the growing comfort, living more and more comfortable lives.
Mm-hmm.
So that our lives are 50 times more comfortable than our parents and so on, exponentially, to the point where we can just sit here and do this and some lovely food will arrive in our hands. Of what does it do to a society when that's reality?
Right.
It's just fucking crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. Just like, you know, kind of being in a river and being dragged along by the current, and this idea of progress and everything is always, we're trying to make things better by making things more efficient and faster and more entertaining and smaller. Like technology needs to keep shrinking and shrinking so you can just fit it into, a thimble and carry it with you everywhere.
Your brain.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like fascinating and terrifying in equal measure.
Yeah. And unstoppable.
Yeah. Yeah. Lovely, lovely, optimistic times. I would say if I'm going to finish on a really basic note, I cannot leave this without saying to you, who do you think would win in a fight between a bear and a shark?
There's a lot of quite good arguments given for both, obviously, in the book. I think it would have to be a shark, because I think once you get the bear underwater,
mm-hmm.
it's dead, whereas the shark can't come out of the water because that's the playing field is like, I think it's like waist high water for the bear or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that gives it the edge.
Yeah.
And it's faster, much faster.
Yeah. And, you know, for the water to be high enough that the shark can function and move at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's already got the advantage because it can move so much quicker than the bear.
It could just take a massive run up with its mouth open, take the bear. Mm-hmm. All the bear can really do is like lumber around and it's got its little mouth. Yeah. The shark would take it, I think.
Yeah. Okay. We've got it. We figured it out.
Yeah.
Well, this has been very, very fun. I've really enjoyed this.
Good. Yeah, me too.
I really appreciate you making time for me.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
That was a great chat. Thanks again to Jonathan for making time for me. The new Everything Everything album, Mountain Head, is out this Friday, March 1st. So give it a listen, why don't ya? Okay, quick spark of the week from me. I'm reading The Secret History by Donna Tartt, which everyone else in the world has already read, but sometimes I like to lag very far behind. It's great. She's such a good writer, and the story is so compelling, and it's also centered around a very thinly veiled version of Bennington College in Vermont, where Donna Tartt and Bret Easton Ellis and lots of other authors and artists went, and my uncle taught there for decades, so it's got a special place in my heart. Anyway, in summary, great book. Check it out. And that's about it for this week. Please follow me on social media at SparkParade. Please rate the show 5 stars and leave me a wonderful, wonderful review wherever you can. And until next time, bye.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
This is the place where Black is the main character, where we dive into something new like the latest season of Vim, The Scare, and the award-winning American Fiction. Or add to the experience by buying or renting the biopic of a legend, Bob Marley, One Love. And add on channels like Paramount Plus and Stars to bask in nostalgia with Beverly Hills Cop and BMF. Explore Prime Video's culture-rated collection and enjoy old-school greats and new-school hits. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.